I'd like to call this hearing to order. I'd like to welcome our witnesses, Jim Clapper, Director of National Intelligence, John Brennan, Director of the Central Intelligence Agency, Jim Comey, Director of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, and Admiral Mike Rogers, Director of the National Security Agency. Directors Clapper and Brennan, while I've said this to you before in closed session, this is likely your last appearance before the committee, at least in your current roles. And I want to thank each of you before you get out of here for your many years of dedicated service, both in uniform and out of uniform, Jim. John, in many different capacities, you have served your country in an unbelievable way, both of you. And we want you to know how grateful we are to you and how grateful the nation is to you for the service that you've provided. We convene today to discuss the President's directed review of Russian activities and intentions in recent U.S. elections. While Russia and the Soviet Union have used active measures as tools of statecraft since the 1920s, recent actions by the Russian government represent, as you reported, a notable escalation. I know that the public disclosure of these activities surprised many, and the notion that another state would attempt to interfere in our elections is quite troubling. However, Russian active measures, as a general topic, is not new to the members of this committee. We've held more than 10 hearings and briefings over the last 2 years that have focused in whole or in part to better understand the scale and scope of these efforts and the intentions behind them. Each of our witnesses has appeared before us in closed session to discuss this topic, and in response, on a bipartisan and bicameral basis, this committee and its sister committee and the other body have put forward unclassified and classified proposals to address these activities. Some work has been done, but to effectively address this challenge to the integrity of our system of government will require a whole-of-government approach. I look forward to hearing from our witnesses on the details of the intelligence community assessment. Intelligence reporting over the last few years, to include the classified and compartmented portions of this assessment, gives me no reason to doubt the findings contained within the product. That said, we owe it to our colleagues and the American people to do an independent and bipartisan review of the report and its conclusions. I've therefore instructed committee staff to carry out an assessment of the sourcing behind this report, and we will be asking each of our witnesses to provide the committee access to the intelligence that contributed to this assessment. I want to assure my colleagues on this committee and in this body that we will follow the intelligence wherever it leads, and we will conduct this review in a nonpartisan manner. I also want to assure the witnesses before us today, as has long been our practice, the committee will treat the protection of these sources with the level of security and professionalism required. I'd also like to quickly thank the men and women of the intelligence community for their work in completing this review. To each of our witnesses, please thank your respective staffs. I have no doubt that the President's directive, Jim, to you and to others, ruined many's holiday plans. While this moment in our history is critical, and the testimony before this committee in an open setting will, I hope, help the American people understand what Russia attempted to accomplish as part of its focus on our 2016 elections. I want to make this clear. Our democracy is not at risk. We can rest assured in the strength of the United States of America and have continued faith in the electoral process. We must be alert, though, to the challenges that face us and the threats posed by those who seek to undermine Western democratic values, whether they're through interference in our elections or relentless propaganda and active measures targeting our friends and our allies abroad. Our values are indeed under assault. The key differences between the efforts of the past and the attacks of today, however, is the tools being used to carry these out. Gentlemen, thank you again for being here today. I look forward to your testimony, General Clapper, and to the opportunity to query questions to the rest. I will now turn to the distinguished Vice Chairman, the Senator from Virginia.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I want to echo, first of all, your comments in terms of commending all of the witnesses, but particularly Director Clapper and Director Brennan for your great service to our country. I also want to acknowledge one of the new members of our committee, both new members here, Senator Manchin and Senator Harris. I know Senator Cornyn will be joining us briefly. And while she's not here yet, I want to acknowledge the great role that Senator Feinstein has played, both as chair and vice chair on this committee. We're here today to discuss the intelligence community's comprehensive review into Russian interference in our 2016 presidential election. For me, one of the most serious events of my public life. Interference in American democracy and our electoral process by any outside power is unacceptable. Now, much of the press reporting and conversation about Russian activities have focused on the hacks of the DNC and John Podesta. But as the report pointed out, the Russians also hacked systems associated with Republicans. They just chose not to release that material yet. There's nothing that prevents them from doing so at a time of their choosing in the future. While the target of this campaign was Secretary Clinton, any of us, Democrats or Republicans, including members of this body, could easily be the next target. What the Russians did was nothing less than an attack on our political system and democracy itself. We can simply not allow it to stand. The IC assessment is more detailed, but is in line with previous assessments from the intelligence community, that Russian officials at the highest level, including President Putin, engaged in, your words, not mine, in an unprecedented level of interference in our election. It concludes that these actions had the goal of harming the candidacy of Hillary Clinton and the boosting the candidacy of President-elect Donald Trump. We are not here to relitigate the results of the election. At the same time, I am committed to ensuring that there is a thorough, bipartisan, and expeditious congressional investigation of Russia's role. In my view, our committee should focus on three broad areas: the Russian hacking and release of stolen information, Russia's use of state-owned media and other means to amplify real and fake news to further the goal, and contact between Russian government and its agents and associates of any campaign and candidate. I, like you, Mr. Chairman, have written to all the witnesses here today, asking them to cooperate with us in this investigation and turn over as many documents and as much evidence as quickly as possible. I, like you, am reiterating that call today. It is equally important that the incoming administration and those folks who will take Director Clapper and Director Brennan's roles going forward will continue to cooperate in this effort. Additionally, it's my hope, while we've made a first step, that we'll continue to try to declassify as much material as possible, while again protecting sources and methods. The American people deserve to know, as soon as possible, that their elected representatives have taken a close look at the intelligence report that we're considering today. They deserve to know whether we concur or not with its conclusions, and that we're prepared to respond to the threats outlined in the assessment. The actions that the President took recently in response to the Russian activities was an appropriate and first step. At the same time, I still have questions why the Obama administration didn't act further and didn't act sooner. But as we look forward, preventing future attempts to undermine our democracy and our position in the world will require sustained response from the incoming administration and from this Congress. I truly believe the strength of America's democracy will be measured in part on what actions we take to develop a robust and proactive cyber strategy. Part of that strategy must include tools and capabilities to deter and effectively respond to future attempts by foreign actors to influence America's democratic process. One of the things I've always valued about service on this Intelligence Committee is the tradition of leaving partisanship at the door, oftentimes when we go into that SCIF. I look forward to working with you, Mr. Chairman, and all our members to complete this investigation as quickly and expeditiously as possible. And gentlemen, your agencies, the work that your agencies completed underscores the importance of the role the nation's intelligence community plays and the men and women who quietly work every day to keep our country safe. This report represents the best analysis of the men and women of the intelligence community. These are professionals who have taken an oath of office to present the whole truth as they see it, faithfully to Republicans and Democratic administrations alike. As a member of this committee, and I think all of us who served for some time, have seen firsthand the dedication of the men and women who work for you. I know that one of the most primary missions of the intelligence professionals is to render the best professional judgment, regardless of political considerations, and always be willing to speak truth to power. I support them for their work. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Vice Chairman. Four members, once Director Clapper has been recognized and completes his testimony, it is the intention of the chair to recognize members based upon seniority for 5-minute questions. There is a vote that's scheduled right now for 2:30. It's the intent of the chair to complete our questions in open session by the conclusion of that vote. And it is the intent of the chairman to then move to a closed session, which would start after the 2:30 vote. If there's need to adjust that, we'll make an adjustment on the way. Having said that, a reminder to all members that we're in open session and that you should take that into account from a standpoint of the questions that you ask and realize that there are unclassified and classified reports. And with that, Director Clapper, the floor is yours.
Chairman Burr, Vice Chairman Warner, members of the committee, first, thank you for your gracious comments, particularly for John and me, as this should be our last hearing, although one never knows, there's still 10 days left. But more importantly, the comments about the work of dedication and the patriotism of the women and men of the intelligence community, so we appreciate that. We're here today to present the intelligence community's assessment of Russian activities and intentions during the recent U.S. presidential election. As you indicated, some aspects of our report involve very sensitive sources and methods that we can't discuss in this open televised hearing. So obviously you're asking for your support and understanding as we need to defer to a closed setting. Our remarks today are based on a highly classified assessment that was produced by the three agencies represented here, the CIA, FBI, and NSA, at the request of President Obama, which we, as you also indicated, released publicly in a declassified version last Friday afternoon. Report covers the motivation and scope of Moscow's intentions regarding the U.S. election and Russia's use of cyber tools and media to influence U.S. public opinion. I want to make clear that this report does not assess the impact of Russian activities on the actual outcome of the 2016 election or draw any conclusions in that regard one way or the other. The IC's role is to assess the intentions, capabilities, and actions of foreign actors, not to analyze U.S. political processes or U.S. public opinion. We can say that we did not see any evidence of the Russians altering vote tallies. We can't discuss the full range of classified information that supports our conclusions because of the extreme sensitivity of these sources, but the key judgments in the public and classified versions are the same. I can say that the report draws on intelligence collected by all three of these agencies represented here, and some of which only came to light after Election Day. When the IC says high confidence, we mean we have multiple high-quality sources of information that contribute to that assessment. Intelligence comes from a wide range of sources, including human sources, technical collection, and open source information. The key judgments are based on corroborating sources that are consistent with our understanding of historical and current Russian behavior. And while we cannot publicly disclose most of the information that backs up these judgments, we have briefed the report in detail to President Obama and his team, President-elect Trump and his team, and congressional leadership, and this morning, the House Permanent Select Committee for Intelligence. They've had the opportunity to explore the report and pose any questions they've had about the basis for our conclusions. Both the classified and public versions of this report were written by seasoned, nonpartisan intelligence professionals consistent with the highest standards of analytic objectivity and tradecraft that the IC has refined over the last 15 years or so to ensure we provide policymakers the most accurate insights that we can. And I also need to add that this reflects the intelligence community's view, not that of the administration. Attributing cyber operations is difficult, but not impossible. Every cyber operation, malicious or not, leaves a trail. IC analysts use this trail and their constantly growing knowledge base of malicious actors and their tools and methods to trace operations back to their source and determine their connections to foreign governments. And this is exactly what we did here. Let me start by, with respect to the findings, is that we'll first address Russia's goals and intentions. We have high confidence that President Putin ordered an influence campaign in 2016 aimed at the U.S. presidential election. The goals of this campaign were to undermine public faith in the U.S. democratic process, denigrate Secretary Clinton, and harm her electability and potential presidency. Putin and the Russian government also developed a clear preference for President-elect Trump. Russia aspired to help President-elect Trump's election chances when possible by discrediting Secretary Clinton and publicly contrasting her unfavorably to him. Moscow's approach evolved over the course of the campaign based on Russia's understanding of the electoral prospects of each of the candidates. When it appeared to Moscow that Secretary Clinton was likely to win, the Russian influence campaign began to focus more on undermining her future presidency. Moscow's influence campaign blended covert intelligence operations with overt efforts by Russian government agencies, state-funded media, third-party intermediaries, and paid social media users. We're highly confident that the Russian intelligence services conducted cyber operations against people and organizations associated with the 2016 U.S. presidential election, including both major U.S. political parties. Russian military intelligence, or the GRU, compromised the email accounts of Democratic Party officials and publicly released victim data using the Guccifer 2.0 persona and DCLeaks.com and in exclusives to media outlets. They also relayed material to WikiLeaks. Russia collected on some Republican-affiliated targets, but did not conduct a comparable disclosure campaign. Russian intelligence obtained and maintained access to elements of multiple U.S. state or local electoral boards. However, the Department of Homeland Security assesses these types of systems were not involved in vote tallying. Russia's state-run propaganda machine contributed to the influence campaign by serving as a platform for Kremlin messaging using Russian government-funded outlets such as RT. Moscow has long sought to undermine U.S.-led liberal democratic order. Russia, like its Soviet predecessor, has a history of conducting covert influence campaigns focused on U.S. presidential elections. They've used intelligence officers, influence agents, and press placements to disparage candidates perceived as hostile to the Kremlin. Moscow's behavior reflects Russia's more aggressive cyber posture in recent years, which poses a major threat to U.S. military, diplomatic, commercial, and critical infrastructure networks, as well as we've seen now, our elections. However, Russia's activities in 2016 demonstrated a significant escalation in directness, level of activity, and scope of effort compared to previous operations. And we assess Moscow will apply the lessons learned from the 2016 campaign aimed in the future to influence efforts worldwide, including against U.S. allies. I'd like to wrap up by saying I've now got just 10 days left in my 53 years or so in the intel business, and I've seen the IC get things right and get things wrong. But I believe the level of professional tradecraft and cross-agency intelligence integration required to put this report together gives me great confidence that we've gotten it right here. With that, we'll open for your questions.
Director, thank you for that thorough and concise testimony. Director Clapper, as I stated in my opening statement, I've instructed a select group of committee staff to complete an independent and bipartisan review of the reporting that underpins the intelligence community assessment before us today. Do I have your assurance that you will provide the access that they need to the reporting necessary to make their conclusions?
Yes.
Director Comey, let me talk about forensics for just a minute, because the FBI has the expertise there. And I know there's tremendous investigative value when the FBI is actually able to conduct their own forensics review on devices that have suffered cyber intrusions and attacks. I believe there's some confusion, though, or at least some conflicting reporting, as to whether the FBI requested access to the DNC's services, the Democratic Congressional Committee servers, and John Podesta's personal devices. Did the FBI request access to those devices to perform forensics on?
Yes, we did.
And would that access have provided intelligence or information helpful to your investigation and possibly to finding to the findings included in the intelligence community assessments?
Our forensics folks would always prefer to get access to the original device or server that's involved. So it's the best evidence.
Were you given access to do the forensics on those servers?
We were not. We were a highly respected private company, eventually got access and shared with us what they saw there.
But is that typically the way the FBI would prefer to do the forensics, or would your forensics unit rather feel the servers and do the forensics themselves?
We'd always prefer to have access hands-on ourselves, if that's possible.
Do you know why you were denied access to those servers?
I don't know for sure. I don't know for sure.
Was there one request or multiple requests?
Multiple requests at different levels. And ultimately what was agreed to is the private company would share with us what they saw.
There's been much debate over the content released by WikiLeaks. Director Clapper, and almost, I should say, DC leaks, and what the intentions were behind those disclosures. Director Clapper, you made it perfectly clear in your testimony that the community feels that vote tallies were not altered.
That's correct.
Do you believe there's any evidence that the DNC or the DCCC or the Podesta emails released publicly were altered in any way?
We have no evidence of that.
Director Comey, do you have any intelligence that any Republican system that was targeted by these same groups was either successfully penetrated, or if penetrated and there was data exfiltrated, was there any exfiltration?
There were successful penetrations of some groups and campaigns, particularly at the state level on the Republican side of the aisle, and some limited penetration of old Republican National Committee domains.
Penetrations of those National Committee domains?
Right, they were no longer in use.
Okay. And from a standpoint of Republican candidates that were running for president, were those campaigns, any of those campaigns, targeted under the same effort by the Russians?
The campaigns themselves, not to my knowledge.
Okay. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, let me thank you, Director Clapper, for your report and the point that you continue to make that it was not your job to analyze the effects in terms of the political campaign. I would add that any of us who are up here who've ever been through a close election means that any small item can either be cause or harm. I want to follow up on where the chairman was headed. Dr. Comey, there was some information, though, that was taken from Republican-affiliated entities. There was a great deal of information taken from Democrats. There was selective leaking, as the director has indicated, with a clear political intent in process. One of the things that I'm flabbergasted is that somehow this is viewed by some as in the rearview mirror. I mean, don't the Russians have the capability of taking even if it's old information about Republicans or other information about Democrats and selectively leak that prospectively?
Sure.
And could you describe, to my mind, this is not only one of the most significant items I've seen in my political life, but this is an ongoing threat to all of us and our electoral process. We have to be on guard, and could you speak, or any of the members of the panel, speak to the fact that do you expect to see similar tactics used by Russians in terms of the upcoming elections in Germany, France, and the Netherlands?
Yes, we do.
And then have we, are our allies taking what's happened in America with significant enough importance, and are they putting up new defenses trying to guard against these activities?
I can't say, at least I can, maybe others can hear, the extent to which they have reacted to this, but they are certainly aware. Europe has long been a target of Russian attempts to manipulate electoral processes, so they will continue with that. And certainly because of the controversy that's generated in our country, I think that will reinforce their desire to do that.
One of the things that actually another member of the committee raised is certain Russian activities, again, just to note, go to the seriousness, not only retrospectively but prospectively, that I believe there was a Russian dissident in London where Russian agents, in effect, planted false information in this individual's personal file and then called law enforcement and said, look in this person's file, and there was criminal child pornography placed there. Could you anticipate at some time Russia trying, if we don't take more aggressive actions, trying those actions against American public officials?
The Russians, I think, well, I have no compunction about using the full array of tools and techniques available in their kit bag. So I wouldn't put it past them to do that or any other tools they've used, such as paying people to participate in social media, for example.
And this has been described as, in effect, the new normal for Russian doctrine. Is that correct?
I believe, yes.
And again, we've seen our system, your words, a significant escalation in all, before us we have people with service in the IC and defense of our nation in hundreds of years. I'd like to just go down the line. In any of your careers, have you ever seen this level of Russian interference in our political process? And I'll start with Director Comey and just go down the line.
No.
I have not.
No.
No.
I know we've got a lot of members. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Rubio.
Thank you. Let me begin by saying I don't believe this thing has anything to do with but let me just begin by saying, and I think the chairman's already asked, it's clear that there was no hacking of voting machines and the changes of tallies. And I would argue this has nothing even to do, because this term hacking is thrown around and it makes it sound like some sort of cyber-specific situation. The cyber tools were used as a means to an end. It isn't necessarily what we should be focused on here. What we're talking about here is active measures. The active measures taken by the government of Vladimir Putin to influence and to potentially manipulate American public opinion for the purpose of discrediting individual political figures, sowing chaos and division in our politics, sowing doubts about the legitimacy of our elections. So when if you look at the situation we now face, here's the aftermath. We had an election where, after some intrusions into some state databases, there was a leading one nominee for president warning about fraud in the election. And then after the election, we have some on the other side questioning the legitimacy of the president-elect because of Russian interference. And we have the president-elect questioning the credibility of the intelligence community because of its findings. This sounds like a pretty effective and successful effort to sow chaos, to undermine credibility of our leaders and of our government institutions. In essence, it sounds like they achieved what they wanted, to get us to fight against each other over whether our elections were legitimate and divide us in the way that sows the sort of chaos that they sought to achieve. My question is along the lines of what Senator Warner asked about a moment ago, because we've seen these active measures employed in the Baltic states with Russian-speaking media outlets controlled by the Kremlin, in the Dutch referendum, in the Brexit vote, in the Italian referendum. So let me lay out a hypothetical, and you tell me if this is the kind of scenario we could face, because they don't limit this to elections. They target individual policymakers throughout many countries in Europe, particularly those in the former Soviet sphere. Hypothetically, imagine if there's a U.S. senator or congressman who adopts a policy position that the Kremlin does not agree with. And so somehow, through a fishing expedition, they gain access to your personal computer network. And once they gain access to your personal computer network, they use it to fabricate and or actually conduct, you use the child pornography example, I'd say, let's say money laundering activity. And then they call law enforcement and tip them off. Congressman John so-and-so has been money laundering. And they go into your home, they seize your computer, and sure enough, it's sitting there on your network because someone got into it and did it. And now you're arrested and you're charged and you're removed from the public discourse. Is this not what we have seen, the tactics that have been employed by Russian intelligence on behalf of the government of Vladimir Putin and other countries around the world? Is that not a tactic they have used to discredit individual political figures? And isn't it true that that could very well happen here in the United States?
It is certainly well within their both their technical competence and their potential intent to do things like that. The last 2 years running in the in my threat presentations, I've cited that I think the next worrisome trend in the cyber business will be the compromise of the fidelity of information. And whether it's for a criminal purpose or a political purpose. So this is well within the realm, I think, of possibility.
In the context of what their goals were, ultimately, their ultimate goal, they may have or not, you know, I don't get into the whole thing about who they wanted to see win, but in the end, what they really wanted to see was Americans fighting against each other, bickering over these things, having questions about the legitimacy of the process, our leaders, et cetera. Was that not their goal? And if it was, have they not largely achieved that based on how this issue has been discussed since the aftermath of the election?
I think in the first instance, that was their goal. Was first, as I said in my prepared remarks, was to sow doubt about the efficacy of our system and to cast aspersions on our political system.
Since to create doubts about the credibility of our elections, the legitimacy of our leaders, et cetera.
All that, yes.
Okay. And so my last point is, last time I checked, Vladimir Putin is neither a registered Democrat nor a registered Republican. And so what he is interested in is achieving these measures in the United States for his own strategic purposes. And therefore, there is literally neither political party should take this lightly. It should not be a partisan issue. This involves whether or not we are going to allow someone to actively interfere in our political discourse and divide us as a nation against each other.
Senator White.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Gentlemen, thank you. And let me, if I might, begin with you, Mr. Comey. After the election, as you know, the Russian foreign minister was quoted in various news reports saying that the Russians had had contacts with people associated with the Trump campaign. Now, that may or may not be true. There is, however, extensive press reporting on the relationships between the Russians and the individuals associated with both the Trump campaign and the incoming administration. My question for you, Director Comey, is, has the FBI investigated these reported relationships? And if so, what are the agency's findings?
Thank you, Senator. I would never comment on investigations, whether we have one or not, in an open forum like this. So I really can't answer it one way or another.
Will you provide an unclassified response to these questions and release it to the American people prior to January 20th?
I'm sorry, you said, will I?
Yes. Will you provide an unclassified response to the question I've asked? And as I've said, it's been reported widely. It's on the Reuters News Service, widely reported. Will you provide an unclassified response to the question I asked and release it to the American people prior to January 20?
Sir, I'll answer any question you ask, but the answer will likely be the same as I just gave you. I can't talk about it.
Well, I will tell you, I think the American people have a right to know this. And if there is delay in declassifying this information and relating it to the American people, releasing it to the American people, and it doesn't happen before January 20th, I'm not sure it's going to happen. And that's why I'm troubled, and I hope that you will make a declassified statement with respect to the questions I've asked public. Now, let me ask one other question, if I might. The report has a brief description of Russian cyber intrusions into state and local electoral boards. It reads, and I quote, DHS assesses that the types of systems we observed Russian actors targeting or compromising are not involved in vote tallying. My question to you, and I think I'd like to have you involved in this too, Director Clapper. Director Comey, Director Clapper, what systems, in your view, were compromised by the Russians, and what was the nature and extent of those compromises?
Yeah. There were intrusions and attempted intrusions at state-level voter registration databases. That is, not containing the voting mechanism, but who's registered to vote and the address and the particulars of that sort. What the purpose was of those intrusions is not clear to us at this point. And we saw no activity on Election Day that reflected that anyone had messed with those voter registration databases. But there's no doubt that the Russians attacked, intruded, and took data from some of those systems.
Director Clapper?
I think that's the response. I don't have anything to add to that.
And I hope you will also tell us in the days ahead, Director Comey, more about the nature of those systems, because it is very clear, given what you found and reported in the declassified version, that we're going to be dealing with these issues coming up. And I think we need to know more specifics. We can do it in a classified session about the nature of those systems. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, let me start by thanking Director Clapper and Director Brennan for your many years of service to your country. I also want to say that I appreciate the work that has been done by the intelligence community to produce this report, and I accept its findings. I do think that it's important that we understand more fully the extent of Russian intrusions into the electoral process to try to shape public opinion. And it is important to underscore two points that have been brought out already, and that is that there is no evidence that voting totals were manipulated or changed, or that emails that were released were manipulated or changed. Is that correct, Director Clapper?
That's correct.
The unclassified assessment states that Republican-affiliated websites were hacked by the Russians, but the report does not go into detail about whether or not data were taken, stolen from those systems, and whether information came from networks used by Republican candidates, whether that included the Trump campaign. Could you give us a fuller understanding of the hacking on the Republican side? Was the Trump campaign, for example, hacked by the Russians? Or if Mr. Comey is the better person for this.
Thank you, Senator.
Director.
And I want to be thoughtful about what I say in an open setting, but there was evidence that there was hacking directed at state-level organizations, state-level campaigns, and the RNC, but old domains of the RNC, that is, email domains that they were no longer using, and that information was harvested from there, but it was old stuff. None of that was released. We did not develop any evidence that the Trump campaign or the current RNC was successfully hacked.
Does the IC's conclusion that the Russians sought to assist President-elect Trump's campaign depend upon an assessment then that the Russians covertly collected information and from primarily Democratic sources, but some Republican sources as well, but only chose to release the derogatory information from Democratic sources?
That's correct.
And I noticed, having looked at many IC assessments, that this one was produced by three agencies. And usually, I'm used to seeing assessments where the entire intelligence community is involved. For example, the State Department's Bureau, which was the Bureau that was correct about the weapons of mass destruction, was not mentioned in the report. Is there a reason why it was, did you only need the CIA, the FBI and NSA?
It had a lot to do with the sensitivity of the sources and who could actually contribute to the putting the assessment together. And we can discuss all that in a closed session.
Thank you. Finally, I just want to underscore your point that we have talked a lot about the Russians' attempt to mold public opinion for our campaign, and as Senator Rubio so eloquently said, sow the divisions and seeds of doubt that it has everyone questioning and charges and countercharges, which are really not healthy in our democracy when a new administration is taking over. But there's also an active Russian campaign to infiltrate, as you have said, military systems, defense contractor systems, critical infrastructure, commercial interests. Don't we need to take a broad look at all of the efforts by our adversaries to either control critical infrastructure, for example, or influence decision-making in those arenas as well?
Well, I think, if I understand your comment, Senator Collins, the point is valid that this was a multifaceted activity, and it began with a rather broad-gauged assault, if you will, to attempt to infiltrate many entities across the board, which, you know, military, commercial, governmental, party-related. And so, yes, they think of this holistically and use many tools, as they did in this case. Hacking was just but one of them.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Heinrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I want to thank Senator Collins for her continued focus on critical infrastructure, because that's something that, in light of what we've learned, I think we need to think through and realize what our exposures are. I want to thank all of our witnesses. Attribution, obviously, of responsibility in cyber attacks is the first key step towards imposing a cost on those involved. Since a number of us wrote to the President in November, asking that information on Russian interference in the presidential election be declassified. The four of you and your respective agencies have done some very important work in making as much of your findings public as possible. And I want to say I'm very grateful for that. The public needs to understand what is at risk here. To those who criticize these investigations as partisan, I would remind them that Russia didn't do this to help the Republican candidate. Russia did this to help Russia and to weaken America. And therein lies the heart of why this is so important, because in the next election, the shoe could easily be on the other foot, and a foreign power could decide it wants the Democrat to win this time. I think that both scenarios are deeply offensive, and foreign influence in our elections is intolerable no matter which party benefits in any given election. The ongoing efforts of Russia to impact U.S. elections threatens to undermine faith in our democratic systems, which is precisely their goal, and I think it's critical that they pay a price for their actions. I want to return to the issue of the Russians being able to obtain access to parts of our electoral infrastructure, not the actual machines that count the votes, but the databases. And we've had a couple of questions on this, but I want to ask, first of all, do we know if they would be able to manipulate the kinds of data that they had access to? So, for example, if you have a voter database in a local county that was penetrated, would they be able to change the information within that database?
Potentially, and that was our concern at the time we discovered this. We saw no indication of that, but that's a definite possibility.
If that had happened, and, for example, the FBI or other elements of the intelligence community were not looking for that, would the electoral boards have had indications that that data had changed?
Potentially not. They would have the indication when chaos erupted on election day, when someone shows up to vote and your address is different, or your middle initial is different, or some particular is different, that creates delay, controversy, confusion.
So, unfortunately, I think this tells us that we are vulnerable to future attacks and manipulation in this case. And I think that, obviously, you've laid out a scenario that would be very evident, but also we could have very subtle impacts to the elections. You could potentially have a scenario where someone's voter history, for example, is changed. And if they haven't voted for a certain number of years, maybe they get purged from the rolls. Or, many of us have had, we've seen flyers of our colleagues who've been criticized for missing a particular election. Maybe they didn't actually miss that election. So I think it begs the question, what can we do in concert with those local county and city and state entities to make sure that we are protecting this data the way that we should?
Well, part of our charge in this report was carried out jointly by, and I'll ask Director Comey to speak to this, by the Department of Homeland Security and the FBI, to come up with a set of sort of best practices for inculcating greater degrees of cybersecurity. The DHS reached out in the run-up to the election to the states, and I think ultimately about every state took advantage of the recommendations proffered by DHS. Jim, do you want to add to that?
No, I think that's the answer, is just understanding that they're a target and availing themselves of the expertise and technology to try to protect themselves, and then we, on the intelligence community side, pushing to them indicators of the bad guys.
Director Clapper, I want to, with my last question, sort of change gears here for a moment. I asked you in the Armed Services Committee here in last week about the role of Russian propaganda media outlets like RT. I saw a comment from General Flynn last August that sort of compared RT to CNN or MSNBC. Is that a fair analogy? Is there a structural difference between the way that RT exists within the media infrastructure and, say, a Fox News or MSNBC or CNN or CBS?
To me, the major difference here is the bulk of funding for RT comes from the Russian government, and the Russian government gives editorial direction on what RT is supposed to broadcast. So I think that's a A little bit different than CNN.
And they seem to exercise that discretion.
Yes, they do.
Thank you.
Senator Blunt.
Director Clapper, does RT get any of its broadcast into the United States?
Yes, it does some.
It does?
It's very prevalent in Europe, and lesser so. I think there's an RT channel here.
And that would be a channel that would be accessible here to some number of people here?
Yes.
Let me...
I don't know the... You know, the audience size of RT, but they
I doubt if it's very large, would be my guess. But I don't want to defend RT. I think it's a propaganda arm of a government that is definitely not on our side, and we need to be aware of that. We ought to need to be aware that I think you said at one point that they. I think at that point you meant the Russians think about this holistically and use many tools. We have lots of other countries, the Chinese particularly, that we also believe look holistically and use many tools. It's one of the topics, as you know from our other meetings over the years, I'm very concerned about cyber generally. I'm also concerned about our failure to secure federal records. I think we could certainly give advice to states as to how to secure their records since we've had intrusions into our personnel system, since we've had hacking into the clearance process that a significant number of Americans, including all of you and most of us, have gone through that are very detailed. You know, I was the state election official, chief election official in Missouri at one time, and those records, while could be confusing on election day. I don't believe there's any evidence of polling places where people had lines that were backed up because there were record changes that were out of the ordinary. I mean, often people show up and say, oh, I know I sent my voter transfer in when they may or may not have, but Director Comey, we don't have any evidence of any disruption of the participation process because somebody got into local registration records. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
It's also my opinion that in any state I'm aware of, there's nothing in those records that's not publicly available. You can go to the local registration office. You can often go directly into those records to access those records. Frankly, we have lost a lot more secure records at the federal level that can often go directly into those records to access those records. Frankly, we have lost a lot more secure records at the federal level than the relatively open voter registration records. That doesn't mean that we don't want to help state and local officials secure their records in every way, but those are neither the most confidential records nor the hardest records to get into. And I guess for purposes of this discussion, most importantly, there's no indication that any effort to get into those records impacted Election Day. And I think you've all repeatedly said absolutely no indication that anything, there was any intrusion into the vote counting process. I was a local election official when we first started counting ballots with computers. And one of my concerns always was that the security for how you'd verify that system was only really protected by how many of those systems were going on all over the country. The diversity of the system itself makes it fairly hard to manipulate. I don't know that we'd benefit by trying to standardize it either, but we would benefit by providing guidance on how to secure those important records. No evidence, I think you said, Director Comey, that the Russians were able to get into Trump campaign email or other records or the current RNC records. Is that right?
That's correct.
So since we don't believe they got in, the fact that they had nothing to release should not be a shock. Yeah, since they didn't have the records. And we do believe they tried to get in?
I can't say with respect to the Trump campaign, with respect to the RNC, there's no doubt they hit an RNC domain. And so it could be they were aiming at the current one and just missed it and hit an old one. But I can't say for sure sitting here.
Well, I do know that the chairman of the RNC, I heard him say over the weekend, he thought they had done a better job securing their records. Whether that's true or not, I wouldn't know. I think I did read in more than one published account that the password to Mr. Podesta's email was password one, with a couple of variations of spelling, of using capitals or something in password. So hopefully lots to be learned here, and thanks to all of you for your efforts to help us learn it.
Mr. Chairman, can I just, from the senator, and it was in the public report, in terms of YouTube views and YouTube subscribers, RT actually has a bigger presence in the United States than the BBC.
And the BBC is also funded by the government, right?
Senator King.
Well, I'll just follow up on that point because this is in the annex to the published report. RT America, millions of views on YouTube, 850 million. BBC, about two-thirds of that. CNN, significantly lower. Same thing in YouTube subscribers. RT America, 450 million. So RT is a significant media presence. And I think the important point with regard to RT is that we're talking about hacking. That's how this discussion is characterized. But this was a comprehensive strategy involving RT, trolls, paid bloggers, hacking, the whole package. And in fact, General Clapper, this is exactly what the Russians have done throughout Eastern Europe for some years. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. It's just as technology has progressed, and the Russians have taken advantage of it for this purpose.
I just want to be sure I heard correctly. Mr. Comey, did you answer Senator Wyden's question that there is an investigation underway as to connections between either the political campaigns and the Russians?
I didn't say one way or another.
You didn't say that there
was. That was my intention, at least.
You didn't say one way or another whether even there's an investigation underway.
Correct. I don't, especially in a public forum, we never confirm or deny a pending investigation.
Irony of your making that statement here, I cannot avoid, but I'll move on.
Well, we sometimes think differently about closed investigations, but he asked me if I had any pending investigations, and we're not going to talk about that.
All right. Is it my understanding that there are actually three reports, a highly classified that only went to certain individuals, classified, which this committee has seen in the public report, but that the conclusions of those three reports are identical? Is that correct?
That's correct.
And the only issue, the difference between them, is sources and methods. Is that correct?
Largely.
And the reason you can't reveal sources and methods is that you would compromise future opportunities to gain information and also compromise fragile sources.
Exactly.
It seems to me that trust is one of the issues, and I mentioned in the Armed Services Committee, my folks in Maine tend to be skeptical. Prove it. Speak to me for a moment about the difficulty of proving what you've concluded pretty unequivocally without revealing sources and methods.
That's
how do I convince my barber in Brunswick that this is for real?
Well, that's why we have intelligence oversight committees to represent the American people with whom we cannot share as fully and completely as we might like the evidentiary proof that we have and in which we're very confident. So we're very dependent on, given the nature of intelligence work to start with, very dependent on you as our overseers to look at that yourselves on behalf of the electorate.
But I think it is important to make the point to the public why sources and methods need to be protected.
Well, we spend money that the Congress appropriates, and we've literally spent billions of dollars gaining these accesses, which we jeopardize. And of course, this then impairs the support that we can render to the oncoming administration and successive administrations. And when we lose these accesses, it takes money and time to recover them. not to mention putting potentially assets who work for us, lives at risk.
Was there any political influence brought to bear on any of the three of you in the preparation of this report? Did the president tell you what he wanted to find, or was this somehow a politicized investigation?
Absolutely not. The president asked us to compile all available information that we had, and when he was briefed on it, he made the point once again that he was not, had not, and was not going to give us any direction. That's why this is an IC product. It is not that of the current administration.
Mr. Comey, would you affirm that as well?
Yes, I hope I've demonstrated by now I'm tone deaf when it comes to politics, and that's the way it should be.
Thank you. Director Brennan, same conclusion?
Yes, absolutely.
Final sort of technical question. I noticed that the October 7th statement was the IC, the community itself, implying the entire community. This one was FBI, CIA, and DNI. Is there any difference? Why wasn't the report that was just released that represent the entire 17-agency community?
Again, because the three exclusive contributors to this are represented here, and because of the sensitivity of the many of the sources, we made a judgment to restrict it to these three agencies.
So there was no elimination of other views?
No, there was none, but we felt, again, because of the sensitivities of the sensitivity of the source, which we've tried to protect even within the intelligence community, to cast the report from emanating from these three agencies.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Langford.
Gentlemen, thank you. Thank you for your work and your service to the country and the leadership you brought. I need to ask a couple of questions, some that you've heard before, and just for quick review, and then I want to build on several things from the report. Just to clarify again, does anyone know of any votes that were changed or an attempt to change votes?
We have no, as we stated in the report, we have no evidence of any manipulation of vote tallies whatsoever.
Voter rolls.
No, there was reconnoitering, intrusion on certain voter rolls, but to the best of our knowledge, no manipulation of them.
Give me a best guess. How many other countries is Russia currently or have, let's say, in the last 4 years, tried to influence in their elections?
I think one of the annexes portrays that. The number of countries that, in one degree or another, Russia has expended effort to try to influence the political views or opinions.
15 countries, 20? Give me a ballpark.
A couple dozen, maybe.
Okay, so maybe 20 or so. You also make a comment in the report itself about previous U.S. elections and Russian engagement in previous U.S. elections, going all the way back to KGB putting a person or recruiting a Democrat Party volunteer or activist, you don't give the details on it, even on Jimmy Carter's campaign in the 1970s, moving forward. Tell me about the differences in aggressiveness and style. If the Russians, and then back to even the Soviets before, have been involved in our elections since the 1970s and before, tell me the degree of difference in this one versus how they've been engaged in others.
The history of this goes back to the 60s, in which they Russians attempted to fund certain candidates, parlay certain lines of opinion or lines of view. And, of course, they had end of day radio broadcasts and that sort of thing they would do. And as the technology has increased, they've gotten more tools available to them. They've broadened the spectrum of things that they have done. What is unique and what is disturbing, though, about this election, 2016, is the aggressiveness and the variety of tools they used and their activism in trying to convey information that they stole in an effort to influence the outcome of the election. That's different than any previous case.
So additional tools, additional aggressiveness. They've been engaged in our elections before. This one's just at a much higher level.
Yes.
You mentioned as well about the Russians trying to hack into both Democrat computers and political operations and Republican Democrat computer and political operations. Between the, let's just say DNC and RNC, we'll just use loose terms here. I understand there's multiple other entities that are connected there. Between DNC and RNC, were they able to penetrate the same level to get the same quantity, quality, and type of materials, or was there a difference between what they were able to glean from the Democratic DNC or the RNC?
They got far deeper and wider into the DNC than the RNC.
Do they use similar methods with both? They were able to actually penetrate deeper, or why?
Hard to say in this forum, hard to say even in a closed forum, because they didn't get into the RNC. It's harder to see. It makes it harder to answer. Similar techniques, the spear phishing techniques, were used in both cases, but there's no doubt they were more successful DNC, deeper and wider than RNC. Did hit some Republican-affiliated organizations, but not the current RNC itself. They didn't get in.
So they were getting to current information, basically?
Not on the RNC. They got at the state level some current information, but not RNC current.
Okay. You also highlight several other ways that the Russians have been engaged in our nation just as a whole. You mentioned not only the election and previous elections, but you also move and give two practical examples of how the Russians have been engaged in our political system. One was an anti-fracking campaign that the Russians seemed to be engaged in. Another one was the Occupy Wall Street movement that the Russians were engaged in as well. Any additional highlights or any additional details that you can give on that? It was interesting that you highlighted those. Can we tell the nature of, for instance, with the Occupy Wall Street, the social media pages that were created to give communication capabilities to the Occupy protesters, how those were used and if they were used?
Probably I'll take that one for the record, Senator. Just to be, for the sake of accuracy, just exactly what they did in those two campaigns. I don't have that on top
okay.
of my head.
Okay, same thing. It was just in the report. I thought it was interesting just as a way of illustration in the report that there was an illustration to say that they've also been engaged in some of the anti-fracking and some of the Occupy Wall Street movement as well. So I appreciate your work. Thank you. Yield back.
Senator Manchin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank all of you for your service. And if I might ask, was there any disagreements on the involvement that Russia has had in, or their attempts to have in this process of our elections by any of the intelligence community? Did any of you have different takes on this or have to collaborate in order to come to one conclusion?
There was one aspect that there was a difference in confidence levels held by NSA versus the rest of us on one single aspect. I'd be more comfortable discussing that in a closed session.
Okay. Any other countries that have been hacking us from the standpoint that brings a concern that you have with this? You're saying no one's ever done this to this level in our political process, but when you look at espionage, sabotage, basically through military or industrial.
Well, there's a lot of espionage, certainly, collecting, exfiltrating information. Obviously, the Chinese come to mind, but in very much a contrast between the passive collection, the passive exfiltration, as opposed to the actively purloining information and then using it for a political end. That's the difference here.
I think all of us.
Russians are unique.
Yes. I think all of us are, have been very much concerned that the outcome of the election, was it altered? And you've been very clear the saying it has not been altered, nor would the outcome of this election have been any different.
Well, I have to clarify one aspect of what you just said, Senator. We did not assess the impact on the electorate. We did not do public opinion polls because that's not our charter. The intelligence community do that. So we just can't say about whether the release of the hacked information, how that changed any voter's opinion. We don't know.
Okay, knowing that then, what recommendations of sanctions would you have? What sanctions recommendation do you think that would deter Russia or any other country from continuing to hacking us?
Well, that's clearly policy call. We got into that last Thursday at the Senate Armed Services Committee, and there are a range of tools that we could use, and I think Admiral Rogers, and my view is that we should consider the whole range of tools, not necessarily do a cyber-for-cyber reaction, and look at all of them.
I'm thinking what I'm trying to get to is if hacking is so serious, and this, and with the technology that we have today, can alter our lives relatively very quickly. If that's all capability and possibilities of happening, shouldn't we have a broad, basically, policy in the United States of America that any hacking internationally that's been confirmed and concurred by the intelligence community, once you all basically authorize it, this happened, as you've agreed right now, this happened in our electoral process, that we should enforce the sanctions on any country that does this, so to deter them from doing it?
Well, I think, as again, the discussion we had in the Armed Services Committee Thursday was, if you're conducting espionage, then if we're going to punish, nation states are going to punish each other for conducting espionage, which is a passive collection of information, that's a pretty heavy policy call, which I don't think any of us want to make. When it's an activist campaign, as it was here, that's a different proposition. And again, I think it's not our call to decide what to do in response. Our only comment, and I will repeat it, was to consider the whole range of potential tools, instruments of power, national power to respond. The challenge you get into with cyber for cyber, of course, is you have to also consider the counter-retaliation to that. And while we spend a lot of time agonizing over precision and being very surgical, the adversaries may not be quite as precise as we might be. So, again, bottom line, consider all tools.
I'm just saying, when we know it's state-sponsored, Article 5 of NATO Treaty specifies that all NATO members will defend the sovereignty and territorial integrity of other allies if they are attacked. Has NATO intervened at all? Has any of the other countries intervened in this? Our NATO allies?
Well, I can't speak for each individual NATO member on what they may or may not have done to defend themselves or to retaliate against a perceived cyber attack. I don't.
But did we as United States defend any of them when they've been attacked?
Well, if the NATO alliance and member nation invokes Article 5, I believe that's the provision. I'm getting out of my lane here. That's where an attack against one's considered an attack against all. I don't know that that's ever been exercised. I don't think it has in a cyber context.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My time has expired.
Senator Cotton.
I want to add my voice of gratitude to the many members of this committee who have expressed our gratitude for the men and women of our intelligence community. As President-elect Trump said on Friday, he has tremendous respect for those men and women, and I share that as well. Second, those men and women have concluded that Russia hacked into the DNC and John Podesta's email. And while this committee, as the chairman said, will conduct a thorough inquiry into this matter, I have no reason to doubt those conclusions. Third, I don't doubt it in part because Vladimir Putin is KGB, always has been, always will be. Back in the Cold War, Russian intelligence used to refer to the United States as the main enemy, and they still do today. Vladimir Putin undermines the United States and our interest for the same reason the scorpion stings the frog as it crosses the river. It's in his nature. And he's done much worse for the last 18 years across numerous domains. Seventh, Donald Trump won this election fair and square. Vladimir Putin didn't hack into Hillary Clinton's calendar and delete rallies in Michigan and Wisconsin, didn't hack into the speechwriter's computer and delete speeches that lay down a compelling vision for the working class. It's time to look into the mirror, say that Hillary Clinton lost this election not because of Vladimir Putin or Jim Comey or fake news or the Electoral College, but because she ran a bad campaign. That brings me to a conclusion in the report about the clear escalation, Director Clapper, of the scope of the activities, that Russia has conducted these kind of activities, in recent years, but this was a clear escalation in the scope and the scale. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Why did they think they could get away with that kind of clear escalation against U.S. interests?
I think they, the challenge, particularly in the cyber realm, I'll say, is that there's kind of an insidious progression of aggressiveness. And I've certainly seen this over the last 6 years or so, where other countries get progressively more, as they develop more capability, they also have an attendant willingness to try to use it. And we're seeing this particularly with kind of the second tier, meaning North Korea and Iran, who don't have the cyber capability, we don't believe, of the level of sophistication of certainly the Russians or the Chinese, but they are progressing. And that's, to me, is what's bothersome about this whole business of cyber, and when do you draw the line to say, you know, enough's enough.
Let's move to the question of motive. The report states that at first Russia, in the assessment of the IC, had a desire to undermine the U.S. democracy, to sow discord and confusion. Over time, though, and as it viewed Hillary Clinton as the likely winner, to undermine her presidency, but over time it developed a clear preference, is the language for Donald Trump. Can you tell us when Russia viewed Hillary Clinton as the likely winner?
I think that was in the summer time frame, perhaps July, August or so.
Can you tell us when you believe that Vladimir Putin developed a clear preference for Donald Trump?
Sometime after that. I don't know that, and certainly not in this setting, we can pick a date when he shifted gears, but he clearly did.
Did he or the intelligence services ever believe that Donald Trump was a likely winner?
Initially, no. They thought he was a fringe candidate and didn't think that at all.
A newspaper headline about the report over the weekend said something, I paraphrase, that Russian cyber attack aims to install Putin in White House. Would a more accurate headline perhaps be Russian cyber attack aims to undermine expected Clinton presidency?
I don't think you'll find a line like that in our report.
Your assessment of motive is based in part on the selective leaking and the relative levels of targeting Democratic material and Republican material on the one hand versus the other. Is that correct? So that more Democratic material was leaked even though Russian...
Yes, clearly.
Is it possible that they just leaked the Democratic material because they thought Hillary Clinton was going to win and they wanted to undermine her and they didn't view it as profitable to leak Republican material?
Well, yes, I mean, that would seem to be the logical observation, that they favored President-elect and they wished to denigrate as much as possible Hillary Clinton, and had she won, their plan was to try to undermine her presidency.
One final question about the leaks that have happened in this case. First in December, before President Obama directed this review to occur, and then there were none until last Wednesday night when the Washington Post reported on what may be sensitive signals intelligence. Director Comey, have you received a crimes report from anyone in the intelligence community about these leaks?
I don't think yet as to the December leak or anything, obviously this month. Not yet.
Mr. Chairman, I suggest that we should include those leaks as part of our inquiry.
The chair and the vice chair are working on that right now. Senator Harris.
Director Clapper, your report states that, quote, we assess Russian intelligence services will continue to develop capabilities to provide Putin with options to use against the United States, judging from past practice and current efforts. You go on to write, immediately after Election Day, we assess Russian intelligence began a spear phishing campaign targeting U.S. government employees and individuals associated with the United States, think tanks, and NGOs in national security, defense, and foreign policy fields. This campaign could provide material for future influence efforts. And then you indicate that the, quote, election operation signals a new normal in Russian influence operations. So indeed, this is troubling. My question is the intelligence community supporting efforts to ensure that the computer networks and personal devices of the president-elect and his transition team are protected from continued influence?
It's my understanding that they are very, very sensitive to this threat, and we've done what we can to educate the transition team about the pitfalls of mobile devices in secure areas and the like.
Do you believe your education efforts have been successful?
You have to ask them, I think.
What about the President-elect's Twitter account? And in particular, what is being done to safeguard his phone and account, given the potentially dire national security consequences of an infiltration?
Probably best left to closed environment to talk about that.
Okay. And Director Comey, this is more of a comment than a question, but I want to echo the points made by Senators Wydner and King. I understand why the FBI cannot disclose and comment on ongoing investigations. However, it seems that despite past precedent, the new standard that was created over the summer and fall regarding the investigation into Secretary Clinton's email server was that there was a unique public interest in the transparency of that issue. Particularly given the findings of your report, I'm not sure I can think of an issue of more serious public interest than this one. This committee needs to understand what the FBI does and does not know about campaign communications with Russia. And I hope that we can follow up on this in closed session to have more of an idea of what the FBI knows and what we might do to prevent any further harm. Thank you.
Senator Cornyn.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to each of you for your service to the country and for the people you represent who faithfully discharge their duties daily, many times unheralded. I wanted to ask, first of all, there seems to be a disparity between the RNC servers and the DNC servers in terms of their vulnerability. Admiral Rogers, this perhaps is a good question for you, but is good practice in terms of defenses important in terms of securing information like that that was stolen in these hacks?
Yes.
Would this also be, would your concerns about the vulnerability of a private server also extend to government officials using private email servers and engaging in the exchange of classified information on those private email servers?
I would argue everyone needs to have an awareness of how they communicate, whether we're talking personal or at work. That's the nature of the world we find ourselves in now.
And to do so in compliance with the laws and the protocols of the federal government. When did the Russians first begin to hack U.S. networks? Admiral Rogers?
With respect to this particular issue?
No, I'm just wondering, how long has this been going on?
Since the 1990s, off the top of my head.
Okay. So while this has certainly become much more visible and focused, given the focus of the effort, this really is a long-standing effort by nation states, including Russia, to hack into our networks, correct?
Yes, we have seen long-standing efforts to hack into our network.
This was perhaps unusual, maybe I should ask you, in that there was a coordination between the hacking and the propaganda efforts of Russia in order to try to undermine the legitimacy of the election process. Director Clapper, do you agree with that statement?
Yes, orchestrated by the intelligence services.
And is this the first time in your experience where you've seen that sort of multi-layered, multifaceted coordination between propaganda efforts and hacking into our networks, or is this a new new normal?
It's a progression of capabilities as they've acquired them and used them. certainly have long-standing practices like that against European countries.
And what has the United States done since the United States government, or let's start with the U.S. government, what have we done to respond to the hackings that have been occurring in U.S. networks since the 1990s in order to discourage or deter that sort of activity?
Well, we've tried to up our game defensively. We have, you know, selectively responded. Sony Picture attack comes to mind, and certainly there was a response to this this case. But the issue, as I said earlier, is if nation states are conducting espionage against one another, which we do as well as many other nation states, and if the standard is to punish when because of the conduct of detected espionage, well, that's another policy call.
Well, as I recall, during the publicity about the Sony hack, there was a lot of discussion as to how do you characterize this? Was this an act of war? Was this a commercial? This is criminal activity involving a commercial enterprise. How do you think about that? Is that, have we gotten better about characterizing the nature of the attack?
Well, yeah, we the intelligence community, particularly the Bureau, I think does an excellent job of attribution. And then, of course, the hard part is what, if anything, to do about it. And again, I would repeat what was said earlier about, is it against a cyber activity is the best response a counter cyber activity or not? In the end, that wasn't the case with the Sony attack.
Well, there can be multiple options, as I think you alluded to. It doesn't need to just be cyber for cyber. We can involve a multitude of retaliatory options, correct?
That was, yes, sir. That was the point, I think, that Admiral Rogers and I made to the Senate Armed Services Committee when we had this discussion there Thursday.
And perhaps this is heresy, since I'm a new member of the Intelligence Committee, but let me just give you my impression that we have so fractured the jurisdiction of oversight of cyber issues that we need to figure out some better whole of government approach. And I see Senator Reid smiling because, of course, the Armed Services Committee has some involvement in this, Homeland Security and Government Affairs. But we need to figure out some way, I think, to deal with a whole of government approach so we are working as efficiently and effectively as possible. And I know from what I read in the newspaper, President-elect Trump has said he wants to commission a study to come back to him within 90 days, if I'm not mistaken, with some recommendations in that regard. We would certainly welcome your insight and advice. Thank you.
Senator Reid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And gentlemen, thank you for your dedicated service to the nation for many, many years. The non-classified intelligence assessment, which is available to the public, concludes that, quote, Putin, his advisors, and the Russian government developed a clear preference for President-elect Trump over Secretary Clinton, close quote, in part because, quote, Putin has had many positive experiences working with Western political leaders whose business interests made them more disposed to deal with Russia, such as former Italian Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi and former German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder. Either General Clapper or Director Comey, does the community have any intelligence to suggest that President-elect Trump or those close to him may have business interests that made them more disposed to deal with Russia?
Well, the Russians just believed or came to the conclusion that because the President-elect is a businessman, that he would be easier to make deals with than the Democrats.
Thank you. Director Clapper, at the Armed Services Committee hearing, I asked you whether, given the scope and the difficulty of hiding all the different aspects of this comprehensive campaign, was Putin advised that there was a significant chance of being discovered? And second, did he disregard that because he wanted to send a message as well as being disruptive of our process? Yeah, and you deferred that response until after you had briefed the President and President-elect. Can you add anything to that?
I'm sorry, sir, in the question, would you repeat the question?
Given the multiple aspects of this campaign, the hacking, the trolling, the social media, the idea that this would become unnoticed, and given the scale and the intent, would be unnoticed, raises one question at least. Was he in any way advised that you're taking a risk here? And second, did he disregard that risk, not only to be disruptive, but also to signal to the world that he is prepared to engage in this type of operation and send us a signal?
Well, I think, as we've seen, I think, always feels that, or felt that he had deniability. That, and of course, that's what the both the Russian government and the Russian media are denying any culpability. And we're somewhat restricted because of our sources and methods concerns about showing our hand, showing our deck here, so to speak, and what led us to those conclusions that we feel so strongly about. So he knows that. He's a professional intelligence officer, and he probably understands our approach to the protection of sources and methods, and so he can just deny it and get away with it.
Let me just a final point here.
If I could add, Senator.
Yes.
When this started breaking the press in early August, I had a conversation with the director of the FSB, Alexander Bortnikov, and told him clearly that if Russia was doing this, they were playing with fire, and it would backfire, and they would be roundly condemned by the not only the U.S. government, but also the American people. And he said he would relay that to Mr. Putin at the time. He denied any type of activity along these lines, but I made it very clear to him that basically we were on to him.
A final point. Everyone has indicated, and the report indicates, that there was an effort made against the Democratic political campaigns and Republican political campaigns, but one was much more aggressive, frankly, than the other in terms of finding ways into the servers of not only the DNC but to individual Democratic operatives. Given what you posit as the goal of the of Putin, which was to discredit Secretary Clinton as much as possible, assuming she might be president, or in some way disrupting her campaign, it seems to be at least to me, logical that they would devote those kind of resources to one, to going after Democratic computers rather than resources to Republicans. Is that borne out by your analysis, Director Clapper?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Resch.
Well, Mr. Chairman, let me say that after sitting through this, it's to put this in perspective for the American people. Those of us who are involved in intelligence matters at the dais here, for that matter at the table, I doubt there was anyone who was shocked or even mildly surprised when these facts came out. This hacking business is ubiquitous, and it has been since the internet was set up. The question was asked, when did Russia start this? I would expect it was the day that they hooked up to the internet. This goes on constantly, and as we've been sitting here, there have been thousands of efforts against U.S. entities, U.S. computers, government, non-government, and that's just in the U.S. This is going on all over the world. Those of us who engage in this and have watched these things, and most of which have never become public, on a scale of 1 to 10, we've seen a number of tens. This one doesn't come close to a 10. But the interesting thing is, because it's in the political spectrum, it has caught the fancy of the media, it's caught the fancy of the American people. Russia is not, in my judgment, the most aggressive actor in this business. I think there are other actors that are much more aggressive, and indeed, I think, much more dangerous. It isn't limited to state actors. There's state actors, there's non-state actors, and there's combinations. They go after everything. The criminal element is particularly troubling to a lot of people. I just heard Director Clapper. I think it's the first time I've ever heard an admission by an intelligence person that the U.S. does espionage. And by that, I think think he's inferring in the context we're in that that the U.S. does this. Now, I'm not confirming that. I'll leave that to Mr. Clapper to do. But nonetheless, the other interesting thing I found is I think I agree with Director Clapper entirely that you want to be careful here when you're talking about how you're going to respond to this. And if it's responded to with a similar type of hacking, that escalates very, very quickly. And we've sat through, actually gamed out what would happen in a situation where we had an actual hacking and then decided how we were going to respond to it, and if we did, how the other side would respond to it. The good that has come out of all of this is that finally, I think the American people are getting a picture of how big this is, how ubiquitous it is, how dangerous it is, and that something has to be done about it. Director Clapper, I think, is correct that our response has been to up our game as far as our defensive posture is concerned. And really, that is where the focus needs to be. And again, one would hope we could find the silver bullet where you could stand up a defense and say, look, it's there. This can never be penetrated. Anything that happens behind this wall is just fine. I don't know if I'll live to see that day. I don't know if anybody will. But in any event, it is good that we have this on the table. It's good that we're having a discussion about it. And I'm hoping that everyone will be patient with us and will be supportive as we do our best to up our game to defend on these things, particularly in the realm of most of the challenges that the government generally and the public generally doesn't hear about, but the intelligence community does. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rich. The vote has started. Senator Warner would like a question and a clarification. I have a clarification. Do any other members seek anything in this open session? If not, I'll recognize Senator Warner.
My question is this. I mean, one, I'm intrigued by my colleague's comment. I think many of us felt the conclusions were accurate. In many ways, it was the president-elect until Friday who was questioning these results. I believe, and I would go back to your comments in my first line of question, when all four of you, with literally hundreds of years of experience, said you have never seen anything in your career that approaches this level of Russian activities. And we can debate who is the most serious threat, but anyone that underestimates the seriousness of this Russian threat, I think, does so at their own peril. I want to ask you, Director Comey, then I want to get a clarification. If a thief came up to the DNC and broke in and stole all of the most valuable information, and that same thief then drove up to the RNC, and because they had a better lock on the door, was only able to break in and get some old information, would both of those be crimes and would both of those be prosecuted?
Sure, yes.
Director Clapper, one thing that I wanted to clarify, because I think particularly with Senator Collins, there might have been some ambiguity. The conclusion you reached that the Russian government at its highest levels was targeting Clinton and favoring Putin was not the result simply of favoring Trump and disfavoring Clinton, was not the result simply of more leakage on the Democratic side, but I believe based upon page one of your non-classified report, is that Putin most likely wanted to discredit Clinton since he publicly blamed her since 2011, and then a series of other activities. That conclusion of favoring Trump and not favoring Clinton was not simply the result of disproportionate leaking on the Democratic side. Is that correct? I just want to clarify that for the record.
I mean, just by virtue of the hacking?
I was left with the impression that the reason you reached the conclusion that there was favoring of Trump over Clinton was because of the disproportionate releasing of information. I've seen in the non-classified report lots of evidence that there was ongoing concerns between Putin and
that's
Clinton.
That's certainly clearly one aspect of this, but we reviewed the totality of what they were doing, whether by this means or by the multifaceted propaganda campaign, the use of social media, trolls, planning fake news. There was a campaign, all of which clearly seemed to favor, clearly favored, including after the election, a preference for the president-elect over Secretary Clinton.
Including after the election, the fact that Russian efforts to discredit the electoral process in America stopped.
Well, I think that was an overall objective throughout, to accomplish that objective. And then as things moved on and progressed, clearly a proclivity for the president-elect and an attempt to denigrate Secretary Clinton.
Director. If I might add, Senator, that's the challenge of the unclassified forum. There's more behind that conclusion. We just can't talk about it here.
Director Clapper, I think this is in the scope of an open session. You'll tell me if it's not. Is there any intelligence that Russian leadership, specifically Putin, directed the GRU or the SVR to penetrate these political organizations? Or was the leadership involvement in this process triggered by what they were able to exfiltrate, and when the leadership saw the breadth of information, they directed a disinformation campaign to happen?
We said in our 7 October statement, this came from the highest levels of the government, and I would assess that there was overall broad direction given with execution carried out by the services.
So one can take the fact that this has been a continual fishing process on the part of the Russians that started in 2014, that from 2014 forward, that was all directed by the highest echelons of Russian government.
Yes, and I think it'd be best to get into the details of that in a classified setting.
And we will do that. There are a couple minutes left in a two-vote session. We will reconvene in the committee room in closed session at the completion of that vote. This open hearing is adjourned. Thank you.